The following program has been furnished and paid for by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSCB and KGBC are not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad that you can join in with us today. And this is the first time in a while I've not played a previously recorded show. I've either had a sore throat or some other malady, or I've been under the stress of some due dates that did not allow me to come up for air. But in any event, I'm glad we can get back on track hopefully today and get back in the live mode, and happy to have you join us. Before we get started, I just want to mention that the host and or anyone else that comes on the show from time to time is rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. If you desire such advice, and we do highly recommend you get some independent advice regarding whatever you're looking at investing in, especially if it's real estate, and especially if it's private partnership syndications such as the ones that most of our clients are in. It's been a challenging period as of late, and the last persons that you I think that you want to rely on to give you the skinny is the guy that's or guy or gal that you're handing your money to. I mean, within reason, obviously, you got to rely on them for doing some due diligence, etc. But I'm seeing more and more syndicators that talk about the go for it as if the go back doesn't exist, and I know better. I think it was Farmers that had the commercial series about knowing a thing or two because they've seen a thing or two. And I tell you what, in the syndication business, that goes double. And I know there's one, well, there's more than a few syndicators that have run, run afoul of the law as of late. And I believe we just had a plea bargain from one of the manager, or the syndicator, the lead syndicator, lead sponsor at one of the San Antonio-based and Houston-based syndicators. And, you know, you may not know enough on the front end to prevent the back end from looking like this one is. It's going to be a doozy in terms of the fights that will come over who gets what little money might be left from disposing of the assets. But it's not the only case. It may be one of very few that actually involve criminal allegations, and I'll underscore allegations at this point. There's been no trial, and likely won't be a trial based on what I've seen in terms of the goings-on. It's supposedly, I believe, the plea bargain's already happened just here in the last week or two. So if you're interested in learning more, you can Google San Antonio real estate manager, and maybe that will bring up the name of the person I'm referring to. In any event, you know, the real estate private partnership syndications that I referred to involve a partnership where multiple investors pool their money together, essentially lay people. It's not the big Wall Street private equity game. There are private equity firms that like these same investments, however, so we do see private equity participation in many cases. But for the most part, it's lay people, people that have worked hard most all of their life to amass, you know, several hundred thousand up to several million in perhaps IRAs or 401s. And, you know, they're looking for a way to be able to fund their retirement. They're increasingly lengthening retirement, I might add, well into the future. And, you know, even the IRS's current life expectancy tables show males at 85 to 86 years of life, with females 87 to 88. Well, you know, that's a long time to pay whatever level of monthly lifestyle you're accustomed to. And you better have, you know, if you want to be self-insured, I guess would be the best spot to be in. You likely are going to need $2 to $3 million to ride that out. And, you know, you could be in a spot if you go much beyond that even. But bottom line, if you're relatively later in your primary earnings years, like maybe your mid to late 50s, you've got to find an asset class, a horse, you might say, that you can ride for quite a while that's going to generate the cash flow that will accommodate paying your bills. You know, Social Security is, you know, I think Congress will eventually figure out a way to kick the can down the road again. Doubtful they'll fix the problem, but as many of you who have listened to me before understand that we've only got about four years or so remaining before we will have spent pretty much the remaining discretionary part of the budget, you know, as opposed to the larger chunk that's already mandated. And once that's done, or once we hit that spot, then something's got to give. Either the tax rates will go up, or the combination of tariffs and other issues, although right now we've got an issue with tariffs after the Supreme Court case this week. I guess you may have seen that. And I think that is very fleeting in that, yeah, it seems like the court gave Mr. Trump the roadmap for a couple other options he's got to proceed. And, of course, one of the things he can do is simply tell the countries involved that think they're getting off the hook that, well, no, you're not getting off the hook, but you may be in a position where we won't allow you to sell any of your products here unless you agree to the new level of tariffs, which I understand is 15% going up from 10. So I don't know. It's a confusing conundrum, the political thing, and I don't know. It's you know, it's hard to, you almost wonder if it wasn't a planned exchange, but, you know, I don't know. I know Mr. Trump is absolutely correct that it's not a level playing field, and somehow we've got to find a way to level the playing field, and he's got several options at this point that'll probably, if it's like everything else he's done, will end up being better than what he thought on the front end. So let's hope, because it's a big number, and I'm not going to do it this second, but, you know, I refer to the U.S. debt clock from time to time and visit that website while we're on the air, and you'll notice sometime over the last year they added a tariffs collection section where you can follow exactly the tariffs that have come in, and I think, if I recall correctly, they've still got even a comparison on the larger country that we deal with, the trade imbalance, and what it currently sits at. So you can see exactly who is taking it to us still. And I don't know. I think it's going to be a valuable piece of revenue that we can bring in until such time as whoever the next regime is here in the U.S. Decides maybe not to use tariffs quite as prolifically. I would say it's pretty interesting that in spite of all the rhetoric about Trump's tariffs being, you know, bad logic, it's funny how the last administration didn't seek to remove the tariffs that were in place when they took office from Trump's initial presidency. And I think, you know, that's true of a lot of things. I mean, you know, you can step back and look at what, as I was watching this weekend, the big fight over the SAFE voting ID. When you look at what they, and this is true, by the way, of both sides of the aisle, this is not restricted to the Democrats, but if you look back at what Chuck Schumer and several others in leadership were saying, you know, 15 years or more ago about voter ID and illegal immigration, you would be shocked to think that the same ones are now talking about they're bad rules, bad thoughts, you know, for the U.S. to, you know, enforce, not just, you know, think about new legislation. They're not even wanting to, just like the last administration did, they didn't enforce the laws that we had. And, you know, it's funny how the worm turns. And again, the Republicans have done similar things, you know, in terms of everything's bad when it's a Democratic proposal. And then, you know, Republicans, when they have the chance to do similar things, all of a sudden they see a reason, a good reason, you know, to do it. So I don't know. I guess I wish politicians had a little bit more common sense and understood the hypocrisy that they're capable of. And I don't know, but I think we all can understand now the tremendous cost of what the last few years did to us in terms of the illegal immigration population and the health care that we pay, the education drain that we've provided, just the cash cards that they've gotten along the way, the illegals. And look, you know, there's a soft spot in most of our hearts for helping those less fortunate than us, but, you know, unfortunately, we're the less fortunate, our country, in many aspects of what they're trying to solve. And, you know, I'll never forget what Ron Paul, I believe it was Ron Paul, it was either Ron Paul or Ross Perot the year that Perot ran and it affected George Bush's inability to get reelected, George Bush Sr. And, you know, at the debate they had that year, or one of the years, they had all 8 or 9, 10 Republican challengers on stage, and they were talking about what each one of their priorities would be legislatively, and essentially they were all, with the exception of Perot, and I believe it was the year Ron Paul was also seeking to be the president, with the exception of those two, they were all looking to have these massive spending agendas. They didn't call it that. They called it, you know, health care and military and education, you know, other things that sounds better than massive borrowing. They got around to, I believe it was Paul that actually raised it in this context, and he said, you know, and he went down the list for each one of the other combatants and said, you know, I think that's a great idea we should implement. Make the military strong. Make education better, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, but I just got one question for you. Who's going to pay for it? Where are we going to get the money? And that was back when the deficit was a meager amount. I want to say it may have been $4 or $5 trillion, whereas now, you know, this probably would be a good time to pull up that U.S. debt clock, and let's just see. I've slept a few times since I looked at it last, and, geez, it's probably nearing or even maybe over the $40 trillion mark. Let's see. Now, 38.7, so $38.7 trillion billion, $718 billion, staggering amount of national debt. And again, don't forget, that is only the part of the U.S. debt that we comp to, we admit to it. It's actually about $100 trillion higher. It's probably in the 150 to 160 range when you add the so-called mandated but unfunded portion of the liability. I think unfunded is the way the debt chart refers to it. Anyway, let's do this. This is a good time to go ahead and take a break. We'll take a short few-minute break here, and we'll circle back. And now that I've got the debt chart up, we'll zero in on a few of those other numbers, the tariffs, et cetera, that I mentioned earlier. We'll be right back with more of this week's Be a Planner show here momentarily.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make it.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and I was just looking at this U.S. debt clock at usdebtclock.org during the break, and, you know, they've added, and this is really, really new. It's not just the financial, fiscal issues. Now they've added a border encounters count, and you know, it's pretty dramatic when you notice the 2024 versus 2025. 2024 was just over 2,001,014. The current, well, let's see, 2025, 84,843. Who says you can't enforce the immigration rules? That is a 95.76% change. And that's just, I mean, it's more than a bit disgusting as to what we let happen. And again, I'm all for immigration. Give us any legitimate immigrant that can go on the Social Security and Medicare earnings rolls. We need it. We're way underfunded for what's coming with Social Security and Medicare. And we should take any able-bodied immigrant that is not a threat to our national security or our local, state and local security. So I am absolutely pro-immigration, but not the kind that was put into play the last few years, and not the kind where we've got to send our own planes to go pick them up. Okay, that's a bit over the top in my estimation. But, again, big, big difference in that number. One of the other numbers, let's see here. Looking at the total budget, or the top four budgetary categories this year has not really changed much from the end of last year. And I'm talking about fiscal years now. So we're talking the 9/30, September 30th month end. So in the current fiscal year, Medicare again is in the number one spot. 1.9, let me make sure I got my zeros right. It's 1.9 trillion, so almost 2 trillion. And Social Security is 1.6 trillion. That's the second largest category. Then we drop down to interest on the debt. And this is real time now. So, yeah, I think these numbers get a little bit bigger. Between now and September, well, they'll get a lot bigger. But we're currently, interest on the debt is leading the fourth category by about 60. Let's see, these are billions. So defense is $930 billion. Interest on the debt's $990. Think about that. You know, the massive military budget has been eclipsed for a couple years now by the interest we pay on the debt. That's a staggering realization when you think about it. Let's see what other little, I believe the Doge counter was added to this chart not long ago. Where is that? Oh, the tariffs. Let me jump to that, and then I'll go back and look for Doge. Tariffs are $374 billion to date. That's revenue per taxpayer, $3,247. Where's the Doge savings calculator? It seems like... Well, I'm not sure. I know it was on here. They may have moved it. This is a big, wide. By the way, this debt clock is now available, and it's been for a while, I guess, but they've enhanced it a bit in a mobile version. 3,000 live stats in your pocket. It's pretty spectacular for the nerdy types that like to keep up with this kind of thing. And to think that somebody's doing this for free, I mean, that's just amazing to me. But I'm not sure where we've moved the Doge numbers. I don't see it just flicking down. I don't see it. So I'll move on from that. If we look at, let me find... The trade sections. Let's see here. Boy, they revamped this thing fairly significantly, the way they've broken out their columns, and I'm not seeing I'm not seeing that section either, but I know it's, oh, they've added some tabs at the bottom. I bet that's where they've moved. Well, I'm going to get more educated up to date on the new layout, and then maybe next week I'll have those numbers at my fingertips. But, you know, I know that I used to hear, you know, you'd hear about the trade deficit and, you know, saying we needed to, you know, address the gap. And it never really made sense to me until I saw the numbers. And then it's pretty eye-opening to see the difference in dollars between the major. I think this U.S. debt clock tracked about, you know, four or five of the top deficits, you know, the Chinese, and I think the Japanese were up there as well. But you know, it's, and it's not to say, I mean, as we know from the argument that's played out in the open this year, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but there's got to be some parity. And it's bad when we are not allowed to sell into the other countries' markets on the same basis that they're allowed to come into ours. And that's the equity of the situation that I think Mr. Trump, or at least he says that's why he's done the tariffs. And I agree. I mean, if that's the reason, we need to do that. So anyway, let's see here. I wanted to mention, I realized when I was pondering during the break, I didn't close out our disclaimer at the top, and I want to be very careful to mention that we do not sell investments, nor do we recommend or promote specific investment syndicators, sponsors, or lead partners. But more importantly, what we work with clients on is we try to assist your understanding of what you're signing up for each time you go to invest in an opportunity. Specifics on that opportunity are the projections, the variables, the attributes that are used, you know, rental growth rates and concession rates and vacancy rates, you know, et cetera, that have gone into the projections that you'll be given as part of every PPM, pretty much, that's produced. Are they rational? And how do you know? Well, you know, we pay for specialized data in the multifamily world in, I don't know, 20, 25 key markets. And we can tell you, based on the data that's been collected by third parties, what the averages are and in what part of the country. And so it makes sense, and we know what the numbers mean. That's more important, I guess. It's not just understanding what some of the terms or what some of the amounts are. It's what are the terms? What do those words mean when they talk about assorted variables we track or we follow? And in any event, we're trying to help you as a client understand what you're signing up for, and then we obviously help with reporting. If you have the ability to have a retirement plan or access to your retirement funds, which we also can consult with you on, we can assist you in investing those funds in these private partnerships. And I know a lot of you are saying, well, you know, my money's tied up in a 401 with my big company, and there are some ways to get access to those funds. And if you have some interest in that, let me know what your situation is, and I'll try to help you understand what some of those exceptions might be. And we'll see if maybe you can't spring some of those dollars loose, because in spite of all the other options, the multifamily real estate space continues to have historically strong numbers, stronger than most other options, you know, with regard to the market or bonds, mutual funds, et cetera. So in any event, let's see here. I wanted to mention, how are we doing on time? I wanted to talk about how, you know, I got another question a yesterday on a phone call with a listener, and I get this question often. We talk about this from time to time, but I know people don't necessarily listen to every show we do, if they listen to more than one even, you know, I don't know. But, you know, we talk about how do we make money in, you know, residential real estate, whether it's single family or multifamily. There are big differences. And I've got clients that do both. I've invested in both in the past. I no longer have any single family homes. We bought and sold, I don't know, somewhere between 125 and 150 back, you know, circa 2005, 6, long in there. East side of San Antonio is where we did most of our acquisitions, and we eventually liquidated those. We ran them as rental properties. We didn't buy them to flip them. And we had, I mean, we did sell some along the way, but we had probably 40 to 50 rentals in any given time. So I understand that business, and we did. Once we kind of learned a few tricks, and again, if you'll join a mentor group, you may learn it quicker than we did. I had already started when I joined a mentor group, and, you know, I did not understand, and I'm not even going to say it was my lack of understanding. I know if I go back and look at some of the information that I was provided after joining that group, half of it was half-baked anyway. So, you know, you got to hit or miss. But bottom line is, one thing that I know made a big difference for me was when we finally were able to automate the process of taking a phone call and sending a series of text messages back, culminating in a link to our online application that I developed, you know, once the prospect decided they wanted to rent. And basically I was able, and again, this, I know you're thinking, well, you know, it's fairly obvious, but, you know, we didn't have many rental properties when we got together. I had two partners, and, you know, we were all involved in real estate, but usually on one-off type projects, renovations and, you know, turning a rehabbed home out to a new buyer. But, you know, we didn't actually run a rental property business. And so we had some learning curves. But once, I mean, the real time savings and the real, I guess, professionalism, if you will, was when we figured out, hey, we can take a phone call, turn that into text messages that, you know, the link to the application can be sent to, the application be completed by the prospect online, and we used a couple of sources to do background checks. We really, I mean, the way in San Antonio it would work, most of the time the people that would drive by your house would see the sign, looking in the windows often suffice. It was not every home that we actually had to go meet someone at, but, you know, I had a couple staff that handled that, but we did not waste our time. We wanted to see the app before we took the time to go show them the house. And if they were qualified, great, let's go show you the house. And then from there, they'd get a lease, you know, that would be, again, sent over email or text. And, you know, it was a minimal of touch. And touch is what, in my mind, or at least in our situation, I can't tell you it's going to be the same with everybody, but that's when it actually became a good business to be in, and money was made. But up until then, and of course, you know, having competent staff, I mean, I used to have staff that wouldn't necessarily confirm the prospect was at the house or getting ready to be, and the staff would go over there, you know, 30 minutes early, that kind of thing. And I finally just implemented the rule that, hey, you have, and we tell the prospects that you call our staff when you're there and we'll be there. And because we were only, I mean, all the houses we had were concentrated there on the east side. But But bottom line is, you know, to make money in the rental real estate business, you know, it's the cash flow and then some appreciation, but it's not the same model as multifamily. And as an example, with single family, you're always going to be capped at a maximum amount you can sell for. We call it a comp. And I don't care how nice your house is, how well you've run it. I mean, there's a few items that could affect the value, but we don't do swimming pools and rental properties. We don't do a lot of things in rental properties. And on the east side of San Antonio, we had hardly any garages. So we had a pretty simple scenario. And in our situation, when we liquidated those homes, we did make money, but it was timing as much as anything. And, you know, real estate is in large measure influenced by timing. Yes, location's important. Timing and just, I'm going to call it what it is, a flat-out coincidence, has probably made me more money in the real estate business than anything. I didn't know. It's like right now, I've got properties in King William and Lavaca neighborhood, both part of Southtown in San Antonio, and we just, a few months back, had the good fortune of having a new sports and entertainment district voted in San Antonio, where the state's contributing a bunch of hotel tax money for the next 30 years. The Spurs are putting up over $1 billion for their share. It's going to include a new Spurs arena downtown, and the convention center is going to be expanded by 220,000 square feet with a new 1,000-room hotel. And you've got, you know, the old John Wood Federal Courthouse is going to be returned to its original design structure as a event venue, like it was built for the 1968 World Fair. And Alamo Dome's getting another $100 million redo. It's a 62-acre sports and entertainment site designation by the state, and everything I own is located within 5 blocks of that sports and entertainment zone. Well, you know, I had no idea back in 2004, and when we started acquiring properties over there. And you know, do you call that luck? Do you call it business savvy? I'd lean towards luck. I mean, we always knew we were in a good spot. Don't get me wrong. We're just getting some icing on the cake now. The cake's pretty good as is. But, you know, with single family, we really, if we hadn't had the timing success that we did, I don't think we would have, you know, been nearly as excited about single family. And of course, I'm not excited much about single family at all right now, just because I've grown into the multifamily market. I've got a couple of buildings, and you know, it's interesting again the way the money's made. And you know, no matter how well you run that single family, you're limited to what the neighbor you had that sold a property 2 months before you, or 6 weeks or whatever, sold their house for. Look at the price per square foot measure. I think all the MLS listings now include those. I don't remember when they started, but it wasn't back when we were first getting started. I can remember thinking in terms of price per foot forever, whether it's a building, whether it's an apartment building, although I guess the price per door is more the standard metric there, although you really need to boil it down to one-bedroom, two-bedroom, and three-bedroom doors. But that said, price per foot on the single family is going to be the measure of true value when you sell. And all I can tell you is hope there's something fascinating that takes place in the immediate area. Location is important. Properties in better locations will rent faster and appreciate faster as well, and you'll keep people in them. That said, it'd be better if it were an 8-unit property or 200-unit, as the case may be. And I can make the argument that the small apartment game is much, in today's terms, when you look at the fees that these syndicators charge, I'm going to tell you right now, you should really look to buy a small apartment building, good location, join together with three or four of your close associates to go take down a 20 to 30 unit property. And you can hire a management company, but you can sidestep 30 to 40% of the fees that are being charged. And I'm talking about in dollars. There are huge amounts of money, and you can sidestep that, and you don't have to go run the property every day. You can still qualify as being active, managing, you know, maybe one of you manages tenant applications, somebody else manages the contractor quotes and bid review, and somebody takes care of social media. There's a role that in a small 4 or 5-person partnership, each of you can run that will allow you to be active. And by being active, now you get all the tax, or not all the tax write-offs. You have a shot at getting more of the tax write-offs, maybe all of them, than if you're purely passive in the larger transaction. Let's go ahead and take our last break here, and I'll circle back, and we'll touch more on that concept as we talk about large apartment partnerships. We'll be back momentarily with the last segment of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Like the song, Bobby McGee's, I'm just longing.
Big dreams and faded jeans.
And I'm going to spend the last 10 minutes here talking about multifamily. And if we have some time, we'll mention just a couple of possible mentor notions or concepts you may want to explore. But anyway, the difference in the way we make money in multifamily is different in large measure because there's no cap on what the value can go up to. And, I mean, there's a calculation based on net operating income and a cap rate that an investor or a bank might, well, not might, will utilize to determine the value. But the bottom line is my next door neighbor doesn't really have anything to do with me, except to the extent maybe they influence rental rates, which, you know, that's always a possibility. But bottom line is your property is a little bit more independent than if you're looking at the context of two neighbors with their single family properties. And so the strategy that a lot of my clients have participated in over the last 20 years that I've been working in this area is buying within a partnership, buying a largely beat up old Class C apartment building, something that's 40 to 50, maybe 60 years old, and repairing that, renovating it, updating it, most importantly, hopefully buy it in a good location, but at least bring the property up to market level amenity offerings such as, you know, wood-like flooring and, you know, maybe a smart home package, you know, covered or garages available, a bark park, you know, for the dogs. There's things like that that in many cases can be added, and it helps get the rental rates up significantly in some cases. And by doing that and controlling cost, you're able to increase the net operating income. So that number can be, you know, as high as you can make it by that combination of events. And doesn't matter what a building across the street sold for, you know, in recent times. It matters what's their NOI and what cap rate did they have applied when they borrowed money or, you know, had a chance to sell it. So, you know, it's just a different world altogether. And but the biggest thing that you as an investor need to consider is you can join the multifamily game, if you will, as a passive participant. Now, if you're passive, you're not going to get the tax write-offs in year one. And you may not get them in year two or three. It depends on when you have passive income, either from that property or from other properties. The passive income and losses are fungible. And if you're passive, your only hope is to have other passive income or generate passive income when it sells. And those losses, you're not losing them. They're being limited in the current year each year, and then they're being carried forward, and they accumulate. And then when you sell the property down the road, that's when you release those carry forwards that were limited. And you know, you have you know, the other opportunity of continuing to invest in other properties, and it becomes a timing game on how you are able to offset losses with passive income. And, you know, I used to use the movie In-Laws as a good example. I never forget Peter Falk and Alan, I can't remember, I think it's Alan Arkin, when they were getting off the plane down in Guatemala or wherever they were, and they're running across the runway, and all of a sudden the bullets start flying, and Falk says, "Serpentine, serpentine." And that probably was the first time most of the movie-going public in America heard the term and learned that's, you know, zigzag, zigzag, you know, as you're running. And in any event, that's how I feel sometimes when we're trying to time losses, dispositions in 1 year and get a new property in the same year so that we get the losses off the new property. If we don't have enough to offset the gain on the one we sold. But in any event, it's a much more relaxed game. You're not, when you're passive, you're not having to go run the property, don't have to meet with contractors or tenants. But, you know, each person's different. Your tax situation is different than your neighbors or your other investors. And to me, being active is just a crazy good way to invest in real estate, because the losses are significant. And, you know, if one of your spouses is, you know, working corporate America, or maybe they're a doctor or lawyer, whatever, consultant, the other one could be qualifying as an active real estate professional within the context of a small partnership. You'll never do that in the big partnerships. The lead partner, the syndicator, the sponsor, it's a, that term's synonymous with that role, they will be getting the benefit of those losses currently. Now, you're going to get some loss. You're just not going to get it in the current year. And that's a big shock to some people. If you've never been in a partnership, especially a real estate partnership that has special limitations and special opportunities, you won't understand what I'm saying, but you're going to get a K-1 each year, and in most years, you're not going to be able to use the losses until you get either other real estate investments that are income-producing, not cash-flow-producing, income-producing. And understand, most K-1s will have losses on them in the first few years. That doesn't mean the partnership actually lost money. They lost money for tax reporting, but the cash flow may still be significant. And so that's where you would see distributions being made, because there's money to be passed out to the partners. We're winding down here to the end. I've just got a couple minutes. I wanted to mention there's a few multifamily platforms here in the state of Texas, investor mentor platforms. Google Syndications, you know, Houston, or Syndications, Real Estate Syndications, Dallas or Austin, San Antonio, et cetera. Let me know if you've got questions. We, again, like farmers, we know a thing or two, because we've seen a thing or two before you run and jump into the deep end, and we'll be happy to consider working with you. One other thing. I'm going to save that for next Sunday. We'll be right back. We'll be here, right here on the same stations. We're on both 700 KSEV, and at the same time on KGBC AM 1540, which I believe is a signal that's down on the south part of Houston. So one way or the other, we hope you can tune in and let us know if you have questions. Maybe we'll talk about them on the air next week. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.